Welcome to United on the Road. This is your podcast that's sponsored by United Road, where we talk about not just things that happen with United Road, but how they intersect with trucking, how they intersect with our lives. From our last episode, how they intersect with our hairlines. My name is Jason. I'll be your one of your hosts today.
And I am Augie, Jason's co-host.
Well, I like to say I'm your co-host, to be quite honest.
I feel like we could go back and forth. So this one, you could be my co-host. Next one, I'll be your co-host.
Fair enough. So today, we're going to tie our episode back to a previous episode where we talked to people from Truckers Against Trafficking and really dug into how the trucking world can help combat human trafficking. But today we're going to talk to people from another facet of the whole trafficking world. So you want to tell us who we're talking to?
So many people working, right, to help this combat this huge problem. So we have Alyssa Walker, who is a care worker with A21. And then we also have Megan Harrington, who is working with Senator Rob Portman in Ohio. She is his senior policy advisor.
Wow, okay. Yes. Wow, so that's good. So we had somebody that's going to talk about it, human trafficking from the government legislative standpoint. We all wonder, what are they doing in Washington? Are they doing enough in Washington? So Megan will give us an idea of some of the things that they are doing in Washington, and Alyssa will certainly help us understand, what are they doing, for people that have already been victimized.
Right. Yeah. She's in the trenches with these victims.
Yeah. So it's great. All right. So let's get to that.
First of all, I want to thank both Alyssa and Megan for joining us. Alyssa Walker works with an organization called A21, and Megan works with Senator Rob Portman's office based in D.C. And so thank you, ladies, both very much for joining us. Appreciate you being here. And so if I could, I would just want to start with introductions. I know I kind of just did a very brief introduction. And Megan, we'll start with you. If you wouldn't mind, tell us a little bit about what you're doing in Senator Portman's office and other work that Senator Portman's doing.
Sure. My name is Megan Harrington, and I am a senior policy advisor in the U.S. Senate. I work for Senator Portman, who's in his second term and actually retiring at the end of this Congress. So I've been in this job for about a little under 12 years. And during that time, a lot of my policy portfolio that I've covered for him has been around issues of human trafficking, forced labor, both domestic, international, sex and labor trafficking. And we got started in that work because in 2009, there was a study by the Ohio Attorney General that identified that there were 1,000 children in Ohio who were either being trafficked or at risk of being trafficked. A lot of them in and out of the foster care system, some of them missing kids. And so really from the time when he was sworn in as a senator, this became an issue that we decided to take on. Thanks for having me.
Oh, that's fantastic. We appreciate it. Alyssa, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Alyssa Walker. I work for an organization called A21, as he mentioned earlier. It's a global counter-human trafficking organization, and I'm one of the care workers, which I know isn't a super common term. Basically, I work directly alongside our caseworkers to provide direct case management support for survivors once they've come out of their trafficking situation. So I've been in this role a little bit over a year now at this point. Absolutely love working at A21. Just super excited to be here, and also wanted to thank you guys for what you've already been doing in starting the conversation about human trafficking, making sure people are educated and aware, because that alone is huge. So thank you guys for having both of us. I'm just super excited to be here.
Of course. Appreciate it. I'll say this now, for those that are watching or listening, they may, hear the name Alyssa Walker and wonder like, I wonder.
The answer is yes.
She has been privileged to have me as a father. just for the record, the other thing is for those that have been connected with United Road for a long time, they may recognize the last name Harrington. And the answer is yes. Megan is a daughter of our Vice President of East Operations, Mark Harrington. And so one of the things that we really loved about this episode was being able to marry together the passion of United Road, which is United Road, we say that we're a family organization. But also we're passionate about the community. And so to see two ladies who are doing great things in the communities and in our world that are connected to United Road, through their fathers, And just as part of, it's a good marriage of, you know, the family of United Road and the community coming together. So it's fantastic.
Yeah. So I'm going to hop in. Megan, where did you get your start in human trafficking?
You know, it was really what I started with talking about. I was in law school, graduated in 2010, and I had done some work around domestic violence and also some human trafficking work at the local level. I'm from Toledo, Ohio. We had made headlines with some pretty high profile cases at the time that were in Dateline and some other, some other publications about, children who'd basically been, trafficked. And also there's an intersection, of course, with transportation and with people traveling on different roadways across the state that made it, a place where we started seeing incidents of it. And so that 2009 report, I'll just say it was 1,000 kids who were at risk of being trafficked or potentially vulnerable, but it was also the amount of prosecutions that they were starting to initiate in the state. So as the state of Ohio was really taking this on and saying, how can we better identify victims? How do we change our laws so that they're not penalized, criminalized? We're getting them into treatment, into care, and on the path to long-term recovery. There was a real clear, role for the federal government. And so I started that work with Senator Portman, and we decided to stand up a caucus, which is a group of senators who care about a cause. We have a little more than a fifth of the Senate, so around 20 senators who joined that, and really, kind of looked at what the intersection is for the federal government. Sometimes it's more clear than others. I'll get into some specific bills that have a very clear federal nexus where states and local governments have been prohibited from really doing anything legislatively. But there are also areas where the federal government can provide resources, grants, incentives for states to be able to better those policies and to serve victims. So that's been kind of the nexus of my work. And we've had a couple big legislative bills that have gotten over the finish line. And it's one where, we've welcomed great support from both Republicans and Democrats. And I think that's because people see that this is happening in their states. So that's been kind of how I got my start in this. And it's been very rewarding.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing. I can hear the passion in your voice when you talk about, grants and different ways you can help victims. So amazing work you're doing there. Thank you so much. Alyssa, do you want to tell us how you got your start in this business?
Yeah, absolutely. So I had heard a couple different presentations about human trafficking back in high school at my home church. But at the time, I never felt that prompt of, oh, I need to take an active stand against it. I'm more so as the person who's like, okay, I'm going to encourage and fund and help equip other people to do that fight. And looking back, I realize now that it's more so because I'm not someone who really connects as much with the facts and the figures and statistics. I'm more relational. So then it wasn't until my freshman year of college that I joined a local outreach team with my university where we worked with a local rescue home that supports girls 11 through 17 who had come out of sex trafficking. And that was not something I ever thought that would be something I'd be a part of, but it just was something that I honestly fought with God about for about a month because I was like, I'm not the one, I'm not equipped for this, but ultimately couldn't shake the feeling that it was something that I was supposed to be doing. And so just kind of went in blind, committed to doing that year of outreach, very quickly realized that it is so emotionally heavy. And I was like, yeah, I don't want all that on my heart like that. This is a super heavy thing. I don't want to feel the weight of all of it. So to be honest, I really shut out a lot of the emotions of it. And then I think it was later that summer, that same summer, that I was on a mission trip where we actually did a prayer walk centered around sex trafficking in that specific area. And it just stop after stop that we made, my mind was just flooded with memories and faces and images of the girls from the rescue home. And so that was really the moment that my heart finally broke for the issue. And all of the walls came down at once. So I was like sobbing in the streets of San Francisco, okay, I'll be a part of it. It's fine. And so at the time I thought that that would just look like going back to serve at that same rescue home, which I did do for the rest of my time at that university. And then that led to mission trips to Thailand, Cambodia, and the Philippines, just shadowing some different rescue and restoration organizations out there. And it was at that point that I realized okay, God, maybe this is more of a life calling than just kind of a side volunteer opportunity that I just commit to every now and then. And so that just kind of led me on this journey of door after door being opened of moving to Charlotte and then working at a coffee shop to help with people recovering from addiction. And it was through there that I met someone who went to work for A21 and was like, hey, this is a passion you've talked about. Like, we have a job opportunity that I think would be perfect for you if you're at all interested. I still definitely didn't feel equipped to be in this role, but I just figured I'm just going to apply. The moral of the story for me was I should just listen to my dad the first time he says things, because he definitely told me months prior to reach out to that girl just to see if A21 was hiring. So he was like, hey, they have an office in Charlotte. You're already there. Why not reach out? I was like, I'm not doing that. And then a couple months later, she reached out to me about the role that I'm currently in. So, yeah, I like to give my dad a quick plug every now and then of like, I wouldn't be here in this role if it hadn't been for him several steps along the way. So while this is publicly being recorded, I wanted to give you that shout out, Dad. But
I appreciate that. And you know, as we go through the editing process, we will make sure that that part is left in, that, you know,
we can cut that part out.
That the daughter should listen to their fathers the first time around. And so. So Alyssa, tell us, we'll stay with you a little bit. A21, tell us a little bit about A21 and exactly what is A21 doing and how are they combating and how are they living up to the mission to try to end slavery?
Yeah. So I absolutely love working for A21, such a phenomenal organization. It was founded back in 2008 in Greece and has now expanded to where we have 19 offices, I think, in 14 different countries around the world. And so our mission statement literally is to abolish slavery everywhere forever. So that's like huge, lofty goal. But our whole staff, our whole team are just filled with this radical hope that we can actually see that happen in the 21st century. And so we do that through what we call like the 3R approach, which is reach, rescue, and restore. And so all three of those programs really work together to provide a comprehensive response to human trafficking, and kind of just looks different in each of the offices across each of the countries that we work in, depending on cultural differences or what the needs are in each of those areas. But just as a whole, our REACH program focuses on educating and equipping people to actually understand, identify, and reduce the risk of human trafficking. And so we do that through programs like our educational curriculums. We have prevention programs, awareness campaigns and events. We just have so many different resources that are free for the community and that we can come alongside people to really understand what human trafficking is, how to spot it, how to report it, what to do about it. And so then from there, we have our rescue department, a rescue program. And that's where we partner with local authorities in each of the areas that we have a rescue office. And we're working towards securing freedom for victims and also convicting the actual traffickers. And so that happens through things like our human trafficking hotlines in certain countries, child advocacy centers, identification trainings, frontline trainings, legal support, things like that. And then we have Restore, which is our Charlotte office is primarily a Restore office. We have done a couple different rescue things, and we are focused more on the empowerment of survivors once they've come out of their trafficking situations. And it's empowering them on their unique journeys towards independence and restoration. And so that can look like anything from holistic aftercare, safe accommodation, relocation services when needed, and things like that. As I mentioned, like because we are a Restore office, I'm able to zoom in a little bit more on what work we're actually doing within Restore. And so, like I said, it varies across each country and even just in the US, it varies with the different cities that we're in. So our Charlotte office is primarily focused on case management services. And so we have caseworkers and care workers like myself who get to come alongside survivors directly once they're pulled out of their situations. And we basically just kind of sit with them and map out what their unique independence plan will be. And it, I say unique because all the survivors have different needs. They have different goals in life. And just so many things vary from survivor to survivor that it's never going to look exactly the same. So we just kind of figure out what the vulnerabilities are, what the needs are, what their goals are, and help them reach that. And so I really love the way that we approach that because we do it based on a community model so that survivors aren't going from being fully dependent on a trafficker or being fully dependent on someone else to then being fully dependent on us. Instead, we help connect them to resources in the community and help empower them to actually know like, hey, you can do this. Like, we're going to come alongside you. We'll stand with you so that you know, like, you can take these steps on your own. And then when they're outside of our care, once they've graduated, they still have the resources they need to be able to continue working towards their independence.
Yeah, no, we appreciate that. I mean, I think the work that you guys are doing on the front lines with the survivors is invaluable in helping them feel valued and, you know, moving forward with their lives as opposed to being just kind of just stuck where they were. So that's fantastic.
So speaking of survivors, Alyssa, what's some things that maybe people on the outside like us who don't get to work with these amazing survivors, what are some of the things that we may not know about these victims?
So I actually got to get some of our staff's input on this question as well, just because I was curious. And what really ended up being the common thread in all of that was that at the end of the day, survivors are just ordinary people who have happened to be in positions where their vulnerabilities were exploited in really extraordinary ways. So we all have vulnerabilities and things that, like, obviously we'd want to change, or just different things that could lead us to be in a vulnerable position. And they just happen to have opportunities, for lack of a better word, where those were exploited. And so I think sometimes people can have this perception of like, oh, poor little survivors are so weak or helpless, or they're just people in need of saving, which to an extent can be true. However, in getting to work with survivors every day, like, I'm just constantly amazed by just how resilient and resourceful they are. And so it just really goes to show, because I think with that perception of like, oh, poor survivors, or oh, they just need so much, I think that quickly leads people to want to just fix all of the surface level issues. Like, oh, if we could just save them, if we could just do this, without realizing that it's about the vulnerabilities at the end of the day that need to be addressed. And once you can actually come alongside survivors and help address those vulnerabilities, they are so empowered from there to actually achieve really phenomenal things. And so it's when they're put in positions where everything else is fixed except for those vulnerabilities, the risk of re-victimization is really high. So I would say the one thing is just recognizing, like, they're really strong, they're resourceful, they're resilient, they get done what they need to get done. And so when you're able to actually help them recognize vulnerabilities and push through those, that's where you see the most growth.
No, that's, you know, that's pretty powerful. And we appreciate that. You know, certainly, you know, the survivors are people just like you and I. They have strengths and weaknesses just like we all do. And it's helping them understand where their strengths are that allow them to get past, you know, the vulnerabilities that you talk about. And so, Megan, you know, so as Alyssa's talking about what they're doing with their survivors, you know, that's after people have been victimized. What are some of the things that you've seen being done at a federal level that are helping to combat trafficking, maybe on the front end, or are there been laws passed in the last 10 years or so that you think are more effective than others and kind of helping stop trafficking on the front side of it?
Yeah, well, I guess I'll start with, you know, kind of what is trafficking at the federal level. And every state, you know, while most of the time it have pretty consistent definitions, those can change at the state level. So federal human trafficking is, you know, for sex trafficking is defined as, you know, sex for, you know, money or profit with force, fraud, or coercion. That's if you're above the age of 18. If the victim, who will hopefully be a survivor of this horrific crime, is above the age of 18. But when you're below the age of 18, you don't have to have those elements of force, fraud, or coercion. So it is human trafficking for someone who is a minor is, you know, sex for profit. And most of the time that profit is actually not even going to that victim. It's going to someone who's really perpetuating the trafficking. And so I think, you know, the state of kind of what we see and what we hear from people as to how they end up being exploited is increasingly facilitated by the internet and not people, you know, kind of, you know, even doing direct messaging, but actually platforms that allow this kind of communication to exist on their websites. And so what used to happen, you know, maybe in neighborhoods on a street corner or in certain districts of a city is now happening online. And I think one of the things that has come to light is just how anonymous that can be, both for the person who might be trying to purchase sex from a minor, but also the inability and how much more difficult it makes it to actually be able to get to that victim and help them come out, whether it's, you know, arresting the person who's perpetrating the crime or getting them out of the control of whoever's like directing this. So I think, you know, the role of the federal government, because the internet and the liability of internet companies and platforms is primarily within federal jurisdiction, that to me is probably the most clear way where the federal government can play a role. And it's one where we have done some limited work on that in the past. I'll mention kind of one scenario as an example. So when we started in this work, maybe in, you know, 2013, 2014, we started hearing from organizations on the ground, probably A21, but a lot of them, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, Polaris Project, who operate the National Human Trafficking Hotline within the U.S., and others, that most of the victims that they were encountering were being bought and sold on a website called Backpage.com. And Backpage.com existed for, you know, several years, and people, victims, would initiate lawsuits. State attorneys generals would try to crack down on them and pass laws. And at every point, the lawsuit was dismissed, both criminal and civil penalties, because the company said they had protection under the Communications Decency Act, which was a bill that was passed long before we used the internet in the way that we do it now. But they basically had a full shield of immunity, and there was no way to get after them. So one of the things that Senator Portman did, we were the chairman of a very powerful investigative committee called the Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations. And we actually opened up an investigation, because what we knew was that Backpage wasn't just allowing this to happen, but they were taking some actions through their business model to keep this going. And after a fight that went all the way up to the Supreme Court to get their business documents, we were able to see exactly what advocates had told us they suspected, that the company was removing words in an ad that indicated someone was a minor or someone was under the age of 18, and still allowing that to stay up. So they were criminally culpable in allowing the abuse and the exploitation of children for profit, and were getting away with it. Since then, they've been charged with crimes the company has kind of disintegrated, but their CEOs, who, you know, we think had probably full knowledge of this, you know, continue to be under indictment. But also, you know, I mentioned that because the ramifications of that were huge. What we did in the aftermath was we actually made an amendment to that law that has full immunity, and said that if you're assisting or promoting trafficking, you lose that immunity. So you can't just go in the court and say, you know, we're protected under this. The case will actually be able to proceed. And that will allow not only for the criminal prosecution of the people who are perpetuating it, but also a civil recovery for the victims. So in some cases, you know, the victims would be able to recover damages that could help with their therapy, with their, you know, with their longer term recovery from the kind of exploitation, you know, that they received with the huge assistance of the sites. So the aftermath of that has been interesting, because that was just one company. But we see that, you know, we still see the internet playing a role. Sometimes now we're seeing trends with dating websites, messaging through Instagram, through TikTok. So it's a constant, I think, challenge to be try to be proactive in identifying where this is happening and who is at risk. And so I think that's, you know, that's one of the things that the federal government is looking out for, and that we have been in Senator Portman's office. But it's a battle.
Yeah, you said earlier that Senator Portman has decided to retire. The Republicans, Democrats, and everybody working together on this, so that when Senator Portman retires, are the people still there to carry this effort forward?
I think that there are. I think that there are a lot of members who have just grown really increasingly aware about what's happening in their state and the trends that they're seeing. But we also face some really, you know, interesting obstacles out here. And there are certainly people who, you know, who want to, you know, kind of who don't really want the focus to be on trafficking. There's been a lot of discussion about in recent years about sex workers and sex worker rights. And while, you know, those are, you know, sometimes relevant in the conversation of trafficking, they're really not, because what we're talking about are people who are being exploited and systems that have been used to, you know, to continue their exploitation. I will say, you know, across different administrations. So when you're in the Senate, you're here for 6 years. So senators are here for quite often, you know, more than that amount of time. Members of Congress are elected every 2 years. And of course, the administration can change either every 4 or 8 years. And so in the time that I've worked here in three different administrations with President Obama, President Trump, and now President Biden, you know, all three of them have had, I would say, you know, a pretty mostly consistent approach to trafficking. Some have, you know, used more resources than others. Some have wanted to focus on different aspects, in some cases more on the international side versus the domestic, or maybe more on labor trafficking versus sex trafficking. So I think you will find continued bipartisan support, but I do think that people tend to focus on their issues. And as I started, you know, our focus has really been primarily on domestic minor sex trafficking.
I'm going to shoot back over to Alyssa. Thank you so much for all of that information. Alyssa, what are some of the things that people that like Jason and I that aren't in the trenches every day can do to help?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing really is education. And I know it seems like a small thing when you're looking at the big picture of human trafficking. But even things like knowing what to look for, how to report, doing the research to see what organizations and resources are already in your local communities that are actively doing counter trafficking work, like that alone can reach a really long way. And something that Christine Kane, who she and her husband co-founded A21, something that she has said before is, no one person can do everything, but every person can do at least one thing. And so I think education alone is a huge thing that anyone and everyone can and should do. And like I said, A21 has so many different resources that are for parents, educators, businesses, churches, you name it, probably have it or are working on it, that are free to communities just to kind of not only give you or equip you with how to know or recognize trafficking, but also steps to take in how to fight it. So that's really, really cool. We do have a global broadcast as well, which will be July 30th. Just a quick shameless plug. All the information's on our website. We also have a page on our website with 21 different ways to get involved in the fight against human trafficking. And then just finding like practical ways you can get involved. For example, A21 has our Walk for Freedom event every single year, which is a really awesome global event that we do in hundreds of different cities around the world. It happens on the exact same day. It's October 15th this year. Another thing, I did mention our Amazon wish list when I was talking about the holiday shop, Thanksgiving pantry. So A21 does have an Amazon wish list, which is where you can go on there and there are descriptions of each item and kind of just give some insight on how or why it would impact a survivor or what its purpose is. And so that's a really cool way where people are able to just scroll through. And if there's something that connects with you and like, I would love to be able to give this to a survivor, you're actually able to directly give to a survivor and support them in that way. And then on kind of the last more obvious option, I guess, would be funding, whether it's A21, another global solution or global organization, or just something in your area, kind of putting your money and support behind them. And if they have volunteer opportunities, great. That's another way as well. But just providing that financial support is huge, because that, just speaking from an A21 perspective, is what helps equip us to actually be able to support survivors with excellence.
That's great. That's great. Well, ladies, I want to say thank you both very, very much. Not only for being in this podcast with us today, but also once again, for the work that you're doing. You know, I said earlier in my jest, you know, within our family, it's widely known that I am the funniest person in the family, Alyssa's second. And so I try to be funny at times. That said, you know, I said, hey, you know, she's privileged to have me as a father. Having worked side by side with Megan's dad, you know, Mark Harrington, I know he would feel the same way as I feel about my daughter. You know, so very proud of you. So very, you know, Megan, so very proud of you and the work that you're doing and listen what you guys are doing. And, you know, on behalf of Mark Harrington, you know, and myself, we are privileged to have you guys as ours. So.
Oh, I can make me cry, Jason. That was really nice.
Don't cry, because
I'm proud of you ladies too. Coming from one woman to another and being, you know, at United Road for so long. Wow. I'm just really proud of you guys for the work that you're big work that you're doing. Both of you, Alyssa on the ground and Megan up there fighting to get these laws put in place to protect people. Just amazing. So thank you both very much.
That was a powerful conversation. You know, two young ladies that are doing fantastic things. And as I said, could not be more proud of my own daughter.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Yeah, I'm not Megan's father, but cannot be more proud of her.
And you know, Mark is just over the moon with her, right?
And so, it's what stuck out to you in kind of that conversation?
So, Alyssa's side of things, the interesting part for me was the three R's. She said, right, reach, find them, rescue them, and the end part for me was the big part, restore.
Yeah.
Right, they're not just going out there and finding these victims and plucking them out of them the situations and then tossing them in a new life. Here you go, right? They're reaching them. They're getting them out of that situation, but then they're giving them tools on how to make sure those vulnerabilities are not exploited again. And like she said, like Alyssa said, these are strong, very strong, resilient men and women, right? Yeah. It happens to both sexes.
Yeah, it's true.
And children, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So the fact that they're giving them the tools, the education, they're giving them a family, I'll say, right? When they have these big events where there are other people who have been in similar situations.
Yeah.
So they have somebody that can relate to them, right? Somebody who's been there, somebody who understands where they're coming from.
Truth be told, none of us are successful on our own, right? And so we all need community. We all need support.
It takes a village.
Exactly. And so one thing that A21 and other organizations like A21, and certainly we know there are many organizations, good organizations across the country and the world that are doing things, but they're giving these people community and support, which is what they need to be successful.
Yeah. And I think the other big thing that stood out for me was Alyssa talked about the holiday shop, right? And that's also my favorite time of the year. And at United Road in the past, we have sponsored local families that need a little help in the holidays. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we always do as a company is make sure that we give mom or dad or both just a little cash so they can buy their children something from them, right? Not something that somebody else bought, but something from them that they picked out, which I think is, it's empowering, right?
That's fair.
When you give it back to them. So for me with Alyssa, those are the big things.
But I'll tell you this, in that whole conversation, I appreciated both Alyssa and Megan's comments and their feedback. But part of Megan's comments were really, really, really frustrating. And not, frustrated at what she was saying, but just frustrated at the fact that we have laws in place that people are able to skirt those laws to facilitate trafficking. You know, you got the website, that she mentioned that was, facilitating the trafficking of humans, but, no law, on the books. So, they get to go through all these loopholes. And so it's just amazing. And so hats off to, Senator Portman and the caucus that they have that is working on closing these loopholes. Now we want them closed faster, right?
Faster. She did say though, they were able to go to bat and get that, get an amendment to that law that was allowing them to continue this disgusting behavior, right? And then ultimately they were charged and indicted on the trafficking charges. So
that's proof positive that they are doing something in Washington, which is fantastic. And so, we thank them for that. And so, and with that, that's our show
that's
for today.
Another heavy one.
I know. It's another heavy one, but, and we'll need to lighten it up at some point here in the future, but another heavy one, but an important one,
for us to
share what's going on and how we as United Road, how we can help, using our voice and our platform for that, as well as, we as individuals and things that we can do to help. So
again, we're going to say gentle feedback, you guys. Give us some feedback, but also we want to hear from you. Throw us an email in podcasts@unitedroad.com. Let us know what you want to talk about. Help us find some lighter subjects, Jason and I know we enjoy doing this and we really want to make sure that we're taking care of our drivers and our employees because that's ultimately who this is for.
Absolutely. So with that, thank you all very much. Very much appreciate it.
Take care, guys.